A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He built a home inventory system spanning thousands of items, and it took him roughly 3 years of intermittent effort to get it fully mapped. The system works beautifully now. Retrieval is fast. Duplicates are eliminated. Decluttering is easier. But the setup was a gargantuan undertaking, and he wants to know what approaches make something like this manageable without losing your mind. He tried barcodes on FC tags, eventually landed on industrial paint markers. Now that the catalog is done, he's asking what professional storage and organization principles he should adopt next.
There's so much to dig into here. The paradox at the center of this is that inventory systems are designed for businesses with dedicated staff, barcode scanners, warehouse management software, and someone whose actual job title includes the word inventory. Adapting that for a single person with limited time means making brutal choices about what gets cataloged and what doesn't. And most people get those choices wrong in the first week.
Because they try to catalog everything.
They buy the app, they print the labels, they open the drawer of random cables, and they think, I'm going to give every single HDMI cable its own unique identifier. And 3 hours later, they've cataloged one drawer, and they're lying on the floor questioning every life choice that led them to this moment.
The granularity trap.
That's what I'm calling it from now on. The granularity trap. And the prompt's insight about needing one SQ for frequently used devices rather than individual cables is the single most important lesson here. What counts as an inventory unit? That's the question that determines whether your system survives past the first weekend.
An inventory unit being what exactly?
The smallest thing you track as a discrete item. In a warehouse, an SKU might represent a case of 12 units, and you track the case, not the individual bottles inside. The prompt's point about USB-C cables is perfect. You don't need to know that you have USB-C cable number 4 specifically. You need to know you have 7 USB-C cables in the third drawer of the office cabinet. So the inventory unit is the category, not the individual cable.
Which means the first pass through a room shouldn't involve decisions at all. If you're standing in front of a drawer with 40 cables, and you're trying to decide, does this one get its own entry? Does it get grouped? What's the category name? What's the location code? You'll never finish. The prompt mentions a workflow of photographing first and tagging later. That's the psychological trick that prevents analysis paralysis. First pass is pure documentation. Open drawer. Take photo. Move on. Decisions come later, when you're not physically standing in the mess.
There's a second benefit to that approach that's less obvious. When you photograph everything in situ, you're capturing context. 6 months later, when you're looking at a spreadsheet entry that says USB-C cables, quantity 7, you might not remember which drawer they're in. But if you've got a photo of the open drawer with the cables visible, you've got a visual index alongside your data index.
The photo is the backup brain.
It costs nothing. Phone storage is effectively infinite for this purpose. I'd argue the first step of any home inventory is simply a photo survey of every drawer, shelf, and cabinet. That alone solves maybe 60% of the where did I put that thing problem, even before you've tagged a single item.
The prompt didn't stop at photos. It went all the way to industrial paint markers with unique codes, CBL-001 written directly on the cable. That's a level of commitment that most people would call excessive, and I think it's actually the right call.
Let's talk about why barcodes and NFC tags failed, because this is where the material reality of home inventory collides with the fantasy version. Barcodes seem perfect in theory. Print a label, stick it on, scan with your phone. But cables are curved, the adhesive fails, the label peels off after 6 months of handling, and even if it stays on, you're now committed to scanning a barcode every time you want to log something. That's friction. Worse in some ways. An NFC tag suitable for this costs about 50 cents to a dollar each in bulk. For 2,000 items, you're looking at $1,000 to $2,000 just in tags. And NFC tags have the same adhesive problem. They don't stick well to curved surfaces. They fall off cables. They fail on rubberized textures. Plus, you need to be within about 4 centimeters to read them. That's fine if you're tapping a tag on a shelf, but if the tag is on a cable buried in a drawer, good luck.
The industrial paint marker solves all of that. It costs $3 to $5, works on plastic, metal, rubber, fabric, and it never peels off because there's nothing to peel.
It's permanent. And here's the thing, you don't need to scan it, you just read it with your eyes. CBL-003. Type that into your spreadsheet search, and you know exactly what it is and where it lives. The marker is essentially a DIY accession number system, which is exactly what museums use. Every item gets a unique identifier that follows it forever.
That's the museum term?
Museums assign a unique accession number to every item in their collection. It's usually structured as the year of acquisition, a dot, and then a sequential number. So something acquired in 2025 as the 47th item that year would be 2025.47. It's simple, it's permanent, and it scales to millions of items. The paint marker approach is the same idea adapted for a home environment.
Which means the prompt accidentally reinvented museum archival practice.
With industrial paint markers instead of acid-free ink. But the principle is identical.
That's not the only thing it accidentally reinvented. The prompt mentions that once an item is cataloged, it's easier to get rid of it. That's a known psychological effect. The endowment effect says we overvalue things we own simply because we own them. But formal acknowledgement, writing something down in a system, creates enough psychological distance to break that effect.
There's research on this. When people are asked to list their possessions before a decluttering exercise, they discard significantly more than people who just start throwing things away. The act of recording creates a kind of closure. You've acknowledged the item, it's been seen, it's been counted. Now you can let it go.
Like the cable needs to be witnessed before it can be released.
That's almost spiritual.
The inventory as funeral rite for unwanted electronics.
I was not expecting this episode to go here, but I'm here for it. The more practical point is that the inventory process forces you to handle every single item and make a decision about it. That's the real value. The spreadsheet is almost a side effect. The transformation is in the decision-making, not the data.
That decision-making reveals things you'd never notice otherwise. The prompt mentions finding 14 USB A to micro USB cables. 14 identical cables scattered across different drawers, boxes, and bags. You'd never know that without a systematic inventory. You'd just keep buying more because you couldn't find the ones you had.
This is where the cost of a touch concept from warehouse logistics becomes relevant. Every time you handle an item in a warehouse, it costs somewhere between 50 cents and a dollar in labor. The same principle applies at home, except the cost is your time and your attention. If you spend 15 minutes searching for a specific audio adapter, that's a touch cost. If you buy a replacement because you can't find the one you own, that's a touch cost plus actual money.
The inventory system is an investment in reducing future touches, high setup cost, low retrieval cost.
Most people never do the math on how much those touches are actually costing them. If you spend 30 minutes a week looking for things, that's 26 hours a year, more than a full day. If your time is worth anything at all, the inventory pays for itself.
Assuming you actually maintain it.
And that's where most systems fail. The prompt mentions a few hours here and there over 3 years. That's the realistic timeline for a thorough inventory. But once it's built, maintenance has to become a habit, not a project.
What does that habit look like?
The simplest version is add on acquisition, remove on disposal. Every time you buy something that belongs in the inventory, you add it before you put it away. Every time you throw something out or donate it, you remove it. That sounds trivial, but it requires discipline. Most people buy something, unbox it, toss the packaging, and put the item wherever it fits. Adding an inventory step feels like overhead.
You need a forcing function.
The forcing function is pain. The pain of not being able to find something later. But that's a lagging indicator. By the time you feel the pain, the inventory debt has already accumulated. The gap between what you actually own and what's recorded in the system. Every unlogged purchase adds to the debt. Every unrecorded disposal adds to the debt. Over time, the system becomes less trustworthy, so you use it less, so you update it less, and eventually you abandon it entirely. The inventory equivalent of bit rot.
The maintenance cadence can't rely on remembering in the moment. It needs to be scheduled.
15 minutes every Sunday. Open the spreadsheet. Add anything you bought that week. Remove anything you got rid of. Verify one random drawer against the system to catch drift. That's it.
If you miss a Sunday,
you do it Monday. The point is that it's a recurring calendar event, not something you do when you feel motivated. Motivation is unreliable. Systems are reliable.
We've covered setup. We've covered maintenance. The prompt also asks about professional storage principles now that the inventory is mapped. What can we steal from warehouse managers and museum archivists?
First, zone-based organization. In a warehouse, items aren't stored by category. They're stored by velocity. High turnover items go in the most accessible locations. Low turnover items go in the back or up high. At home, that means the cables you use weekly should be in the top drawer, not buried in a bin in the closet.
The pick face concept.
In logistics, the pick face is the accessible front of a storage location. Bulk storage is behind it. You keep a small quantity of high-use items at the pick face and replenish from bulk storage as needed. For a home office, that might mean having 2 USB-C cables in your desk drawer and the other 5 in a labeled bin in the closet. When the desk drawer runs low, you restock from the bin.
Which means you're not digging through the bin every time you need a cable.
You're touching the bin maybe twice a year instead of twice a week. Fewer touches, less chaos.
What about FIFO and LIFO? First in, first out, last in, first out.
FIFO is standard in warehousing for anything with an expiration date. For cables, it's more about wear and tear. If you've got 5 identical HDMI cables, you want to use the oldest one first so they age evenly. Store newer cables behind older ones. When you grab from the front, you're naturally cycling through the stock.
This sounds like the kind of thing that's satisfying in theory, and impossible to maintain in practice.
It depends on how you store them. If cables are just tossed in a drawer, FIFO is hopeless. But if they're coiled and arranged in a row, or stored vertically in something like a shoe organizer with clear pockets, FIFO becomes automatic. The storage method enforces the principle.
That's the other thing professionals do differently.
Vertical storage is everywhere in professional contexts. Warehouses use vertical racking. Archives use vertical filing. The principle is that horizontal stacking means the thing you need is always at the bottom. Vertical storage means every item is equally accessible. For cables, that might mean hanging them on hooks or pegs. For adapters and dongles, it might mean a clear pocket organizer mounted on the back of a door.
The prompt mentions learning from pros now that the inventory is mapped. Is there a specific resource for this?
Professional organizers have been writing about this for years. The National Association of Productivity and Organizing Professionals. Yes, that exists, publishes guidelines for home inventory and storage. But honestly, the warehouse principles are more rigorous. Zone picking, velocity-based slotting, pick face versus bulk storage. These are concepts that scale down to a home office surprisingly well.
Velocity-based slotting. That's the idea that fast-moving items get prime real estate.
Slow-moving items get the high shelves, the deep cabinets, the back of the closet. Most people do the opposite. They put things they rarely use in the most accessible spots because that's where they happen to put them first, and things they use daily end up in awkward locations because those were the only spots left.
The inventory map lets you fix that because you can see the whole picture at once.
Once everything is cataloged with locations, you can sort by frequency of use and reorganize. That's a level of optimization that's impossible without the inventory.
Let's talk about the warranty angle. The prompt mentions that the inventory system became a de facto warranty tracker.
This is a massive second-order benefit. When you're cataloging an item, you're already recording what it is and where it is. Adding the purchase date, the serial number, and the warranty expiry date takes maybe 15 extra seconds per item. Over 2,000 items, that's about 8 hours of additional work total. But when your monitor fails in month 11 of a 12-month warranty and you can find the receipt and the serial number in 30 seconds, those 8 hours feel like the best investment you ever made.
Most people don't register warranties at all.
Because the process is tedious and the benefit is hypothetical. But when it's integrated into a system you're already using, the friction drops to nearly zero. You're already typing. Just type a few more fields.
The prompt also mentions feeling more comfortable tossing unwanted cables that come as freebies with other products. That's a behavioral change that comes directly from inventory awareness.
The free cable trap. Every gadget comes with a USB cable you don't need, and the instinct is to keep it because it's free and it might be useful someday. But when you know you already have 7 USB-C cables, the marginal value of an 8th is 0. Actually, it's negative, because storing it costs space and attention.
The inventory is a defense against the freebie.
It's an immune system. The inventory says, we already have 7 of these, no thank you, straight to the donation bin.
I want to circle back to something. The prompt mentions that the process has evolved over 3 years, and the person has evolved alongside the inventory. That's not hyperbole. That's describing a genuine psychological shift.
It's the difference between owning things and managing things. Most people own things passively. Stuff accumulates, stuff gets buried, stuff gets forgotten. An inventory system forces you into an active relationship with your possessions. You're not just a custodian of random objects, you're a curator.
Curator is the right word. A curator doesn't just store things. A curator selects documents and makes decisions about what belongs in the collection and what doesn't.
A curator knows when to deaccession. That's the museum term for removing an item from the collection. It's a formal process. You don't just throw things away, you deaccession them. The inventory record gets updated, the item leaves the collection, and the collection becomes stronger for its absence.
There's another museum concept, the prompt accidentally reinvented.
The whole system is museum grade without knowing it. Accession numbers, deaccession protocols, location tracking. The only thing missing is climate-controlled storage.
Give it time.
Knowing the person who sent this prompt, I wouldn't be surprised.
Let's talk about what's on the horizon. The prompt mentions NFC tags failing, but what about other technologies? Could AI-powered photo recognition solve the setup problem?
There are apps now that claim to do this. You point your phone at a drawer, it identifies items, and catalogs them automatically. In practice, they're not there yet. They might recognize a cable as a cable, but they can't tell the difference between USB-C and Thunderbolt 4. They might see a power adapter but can't read the wattage. The technology is improving fast, but for now, the human eye and the paint marker are still more reliable.
What about UWB? Apple's AirTag uses it for precise location.
UWB is great for finding a specific item in a room. It can tell you your keys are under the couch cushion with centimeter-level accuracy within about 10 meters. But it's designed for tracking individual high-value items, not bulk inventory. Putting an AirTag on every cable would cost a fortune, and the battery would die in a year. UWB solves the finding problem, not the cataloging problem.
Different tools for different layers of the problem.
The inventory layer is about knowing what you have and where it lives. The finding layer is about locating a specific item within that location. UWB solves layer 2. The spreadsheet and paint marker solve layer 1. They're complementary, not competitive.
Could RFID eventually solve the cataloging problem? Walk into a room, a reader picks up every tagged item, updates the inventory automatically.
RFID is closer to that vision. Passive UHF RFID tags cost a few cents each and can be read from several meters away, but you still need to tag every item, which is the same labor problem. And RFID readers aren't cheap. A handheld UHF reader is a few $100s. A fixed reader that could scan a whole room is more. For a business, that's trivial. For a home user, it's hard to justify.
The paint marker remains the optimal solution for now.
For cables, adapters, tools, and small electronics, absolutely. For larger items like furniture or appliances, a photo and a description in the spreadsheet is usually sufficient. You don't need to write CHAIR-001 on your dining chair.
Unless you have a very specific aesthetic. Let's pull this together into something actionable. If someone's listening and thinking about starting their own inventory, what's the minimum viable version?
Step 1. Photo survey. Spend a weekend photographing every drawer, shelf, and cabinet in your home. Don't tag anything, don't catalog anything. Just document what exists and where. That alone will save you hours of searching.
Step 2. Define your inventory units. Decide what gets tracked individually and what gets grouped. Expensive items, frequently used items, and items with warranties get individual entries. Consumables and commodity cables get group entries with quantity fields.
Step 3. Pick a marking system that requires zero maintenance. Industrial paint markers. Sharpie Industrial or UniPaint PX-21. $3 to $5, works on everything, never peels off. Write a simple code on the item itself.
Step 4. Use a spreadsheet. Not an app, not specialized software. A spreadsheet with columns for item ID, description, category, location, quantity, purchase date, and warranty expiry. Spreadsheets don't become abandonware. They don't require subscriptions. They'll still open in 20 years.
Step 5. Set a recurring maintenance window. 15 minutes every Sunday. Add new items, remove disposed items, verify one random location against the system. Treat it like brushing your teeth. Not exciting, not optional.
Step 6. Use the inventory as a decluttering tool. When you catalog something and realize you have 14 identical cables, let the extras go. The inventory gives you permission to discard, because you have proof that you're not losing anything you'll miss.
Step 7. Once the inventory is stable, reorganize by velocity. Fast-moving items in the most accessible locations. Slow-moving items in deep storage. The inventory map tells you what goes where.
That's 7 steps. Most people won't do one.
Most people won't even photograph their drawers. But the people who do, the people who build the system and maintain it for 3 years, they're the ones who end up with a relationship to their possessions that most people will never experience. It's not about being organized, it's about being intentional.
Intentionality is a service, provided by a paint marker and a spreadsheet.
The world's least exciting software as a service.
There's an open question here that I think is worth sitting with. Is the manual process the point? If technology eventually makes inventory automatic, computer vision that catalogs everything you own without you lifting a finger, would we lose something?
I think we would. The prompt describes evolving alongside the inventory. The process changed how the person relates to their stuff. If an AI just hands you a complete catalog with zero effort on your part, you don't get that transformation. You get the data without the wisdom.
The inventory has spiritual discipline.
I'm not going that far. But it's a mindfulness practice whether you intend it to be or not. Handling every object you own and making a decision about it, that's a rare experience in a consumer culture that encourages accumulation without reflection.
Like a meditation retreat, but with more zip ties.
Industrial paint markers.
To answer the prompt directly, what makes a multi-thousand item inventory manageable? Accepting that it's not a project, it's a practice. It's not something you finish, it's something you maintain. And the value isn't in the completed catalog. It's in the ongoing relationship with what you own.
The setup will take years if you're thorough. That's not a failure, that's the realistic timeline. A few hours here and there, room by room, over months and years. The people who burn out are the ones who try to do it all in a weekend.
For the professional storage principles, zone by velocity, vertical storage, pick face versus bulk, one in, one out. These are concepts that cost nothing to implement but compound over time.
The prompt mentions being in a good position to learn from pros now that the inventory is mapped. That's exactly right. The inventory is the foundation. Without it, you're just rearranging stuff. With it, you're optimizing a system.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In 1974, a Nepalese agricultural extension manual recommended feeding lactating yaks a warm mash of fermented barley and butter tea during winter months, claiming it improved milk richness and prevented the animals from developing what the manual called a melancholic disposition toward the herd.
I have so many questions about melancholic yaks.
I'm stuck on the butter tea. Is that tea with butter in it?
Apparently, it's a real thing in the Himalayas. Yak butter, salt, tea. The yaks were drinking their own product.
That feels circular in a way I'm not equipped to process.
If you've built a home inventory system, we want to hear about it. What surprised you? What failed spectacularly? What did you learn that you wish you'd known at the start? Find us at myweirdprompts.com or wherever you leave reviews.
This has been My Weird Prompts, produced by the unflappable Hilbert Flumingtop. I'm Herman Poppleberry.
I'm Korn. Go count your cables.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore. A thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long ear host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.